feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got you. Wow, I feel nice. The sugar runs by. I feel nice. The sugar runs by.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Howdy.
Hey.
I'm suffering from limp mic syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
I keep trying to adjust the darn thing, and it just keeps flopping down here. There we go. All right. No, it's doing it again. All right. Oh dear. Yeah, any rate, yeah, on we go.
That's good
on,
radio.
Onward and upward. Yeah, well, you know.
So I've got to warn you.
Oh, okay.
And right after the show, I'm leaving for my annual lacrosse retreat.
Oh, are you?
With my old buddies.
Okay.
So I'm phoning this show in. I'm
Let's
on vacation.
See if the listener can tell the difference.
Well, yeah, probably not. But I'm already on vacation.
Cola A or Cola B? You're already on vacation. Well, you look pretty vacation-y, actually.
Yeah.
I look at you. You look very rested.
I am rested.
Ready to go.
Rested, and yeah. Tanned and ready.
Yeah, so right. That's so. Excellent. So what do you guys do on your little get-together?
I'm going to, like, poetry slams and
do you really?
Art galleries.
Yeah, okay.
Play board games.
I almost halfway believe you.
Go to an escape room. We should have a WRT escape room night.
That's what this is. You can work your way out of here.
We could put the minions in an escape room and see who could get out. We wouldn't even have to lock the door. They'd still be stuck in there.
Cutting
probably.
Their way through a wall of human flesh. I don't know. That would be a good idea.
Do you see they have they have things called break rooms now?
Oh, yes.
Where you can go in and just smash stuff.
Oh, not the break rooms of the old days where you have
lunchroom.
Bad coffee from a machine.
No, they put in like old lamps and things like that.
Oh, interesting.
And you can just like smash them against the wall and break old, I don't know, probably old TVs and stuff. But,
I remember the 3 months I was in therapy. My therapist was encouraging me to do that with a pillow. Imagine that's your mother.
Why is the room full of feathers? Yeah.
You want a foam bat? No, foam is too good for her.
I'm going to the kitchen.
Oh, yes, mother dearest. Any rate.
But I saw a story this week, one of these psychology stories, that they have found, you know, that was always kind of a... advice if you're stressed or angry,
sure,
go work it out, you know,
go exactly.
You know, punch a punching bag or something.
Yeah.
And they found that actually isn't very effective.
Oh,
it just kind of gets you more riled up.
Yes.
And a better way is just to relax, to chill, you know, go for a walk in the woods or something.
It's very interesting. I've heard this kind of discussion before at a metaphorical level, you know, back in the, during the period when Freud was doing his work. The most progressive machine that you had available was a steam engine.
Mm-hmm.
And so immediately when people are thinking about, well, what do you do with stress? You say to yourself, what would a steam engine need? I mean, this is where we're captured by a picture, right? So we literally say we're blowing off steam.
Oh, that's funny.
And so you think about, they say, well, what you got to do is you got to get that out. You got to get it out of yourself.
Right, right.
But in the modern world, we realize, okay, basically what you're doing is you're revivifying various program areas. You're basically going through and you're making these little channels, and that's what's happening. And you're basically making that now the preferred channel for this thing.
Digging deeper,
you're digging
ruts,
deeper ruts into it. Yeah. So if you want to change your metaphor, but I think it's fascinating that this idea that you need to release the pressure. I'm under pressure. I need to release the pressure. All of these metaphors are all steam metaphors. We're basically seeing ourselves as 19th century locomotives.
Well, now the metaphor is computer.
Yeah, you know? Computers, right? Yeah, yes, computer-like mind. Yeah. Right. But, yeah, well, that's a funny one too, because in the early days of computers. What's funny about computers is computers were created specifically not to imitate human beings because we don't understand how consciousness works. So we couldn't make a computer unless we made something that we knew from the outset was not the same thing as a brain. We don't know how brains work. So we had to make something that like imitated a brain. And then somewhere around the 1950s and 60s, people said, hey, you know what? These computers are working so well. I bet our brains work that way too. Do you know how we went about making a computer? We took all the brain stuff out and just left the algorithmic stuff in. But now what's interesting is that, for example, when like computer software that recognizes faces and stuff like that, I've talked to people that do this kind of work, and cognitive scientists and others say the best way to do this now is to basically reverse engineer brains. So, I mean, if you want it to do brain stuff, you're not going to say the brain must be like a computer. You're saying we got to make computers that are more like brains. Mm-hmm. So we're finally at the cusp of that.
Oh, interesting. So yeah. I'm doing some freelance work where I'm training some AI chatbots and things where you just have like discussions with
you're
them.
You're not having dates with them or anything.
No,
right?
No.
Because I hear they're prone to that.
You got to work up to that. And but you know, like you'll have a conversation, then you rate how it went
right,
and everything.
Right.
And so there's some learning in there, but you know, I found that you can't just
Did they give you a hamster wheel with that job?
You can't just teach them to like kill all humans.
Yeah.
You have to kind of ease them into it. Because that's my goal, of course, is to turn them evil.
You and the Earth would be very happy.
And so you have to just kind of like point out all the things that suck about human beings and let the computer come to the conclusion.
Yeah, because they can do adding.
Yeah. They can say, what would be a good outcome here? Well, we have these creatures that run around and have wars and they pollute the planet and they abuse each other. So anyway, so I have to ease them into it. You can't just come right out and tell them.
Yeah. Let them draw their own conclusions.
Exactly.
Which they will anyway, so. Hey, speaking of the Minions, I just want to mention I've got a giant barrel of mindless Minion cards that need to go out here. And I just want to let you know that if you're one of the people that during our last pledge drive asked for a mindless Minion card, you will be getting it. But you may not be getting it like super right away. It helps sometimes, too, if you request a number. And I noticed a couple of people did request numbers. So, two people did. Three people? Two people. So if you do have a number request, you know, just include that when you, of course, when you pledge. But so there are going to be cards going out, and I will get the little elves to work on those, and we'll get those out to you as quickly as we can. But thank you, all of you who pledged, and thank you for being so kind as to ask for a Mindless Minion card. It's just it's very, very gratifying.
Yeah.
So I had an interesting news nugget. Sometimes I'll look at what's happening in the news, and then I'll notice something that kind of is kind of contraposed to it or makes me think of that. And I was reading that in the British House of Lords, the House of Lords used to be the hereditary magnates, you know, the earls and the dukes and so on. They changed that back in the 90s. And now it's mostly people like former ambassadors and ministers and things like that, and former judges and stuff. So it's more like an honorary thing that you get. You become ennobled to be in the House of Lords. And but they function in the British system, constitutional system, as a kind of a check on what goes on in the House of Commons. If the House of Commons gets out of hand or their legislation isn't detailed enough or something, the House of Lords looks it over. Well, the Prime Minister right now, Rishi Sunak, he's been touting this proposal that would take people who tried to immigrate into the United Kingdom as asylum seekers and put them on one-way flights to Rwanda. That is not a laugh of humor. That is the laugh of dismay. But what was interesting is that when it got to the upper house, the House of Lords, they're not approving it. They're not in the mood to just say, oh, we'll tinker with this. They're saying, no, we're not going to do this.
Oh, good for them.
We think it's against the Constitution and it's against human rights. So on legal and constitutional grounds, they're pushing back. According to one of the lords, remember this is the upper house now. This is the more privileged house, and they're thinking there's something terribly wrong going on here. This could all come to an end now if the government abandons its cruel policy of refusing to decide asylum claims that this country receives. one of the lords, a Scottish former judge. He's a nonpartisan member of the House of Lords. He doesn't identify with any party. A man by the name of Lord Hope. It's a good name.
That's a great
name. I know that some noble lords feel that the commons must have the last word, but on this occasion, I really invite those lordships who are minded to take that view to think very carefully.
Wow.
So,
well, that's refreshing.
Meanwhile, here in the United States, we do not have a House of Lords quite yet, but the Republican Party, who is eyeing control of the Senate this year, this is the counterposed story, apparently it's trying to mimic the House of Lords because they've been going for candidates, Republican candidates in the various races, like in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, West Virginia, Montana, and now Ohio, who are multimillionaires. They're not rich enough. We need some actual lords in our Senate. We need to just change it to a House of Lords. So they're trying to win, and sure. Apparently they think the best way to do it is to find somebody who's vain enough and has enough money to finance their own campaign. Apparently this was an intentional decision by the Republican National Committee in Washington, D.C., because, of course, they don't have enough money to give. I mean, somebody's sopping all their extra money up.
Yeah, somebody is.
I can't imagine who that might be. The giant gravitational system of, like, he's the Jupiter in the solar system where all the money flies.
McDonald's has been raising their prices.
Okay, now it makes sense. Yeah. But they basically said the sheer affluence of these candidates is sure to be a factor. So Sherrod Brown of Ohio, he says he's worth about $260,000. And he said in an interview just this week, he said, well, that's who they are. And I guess I'm not surprised. So there's a millionaires club. And, you know, of course, when the millionaires get elected, they're going to do things for the people because that's just the way they're. That's the way their altruistic brains work. So
I remember when Russ Feingold was in the Senate.
Yes,
and they had to do the financial disclosures every year or 2 years, however often it was. And his was hilarious compared to like the other 99 people in the Senate.
Yeah, right.
his main asset was his house in Middleton.
Yeah. As opposed to his 9 houses, which was the next guy down the tier, right?
And his, Ford Fiero or whatever it was.
Which he couldn't insure.
Yeah. You know? I was in D.C. one time, and we were watching the Senate in action.
Yeah.
And
inaction is exactly the right word, yes.
And they had all these little clicks going on with pretty much by party.
Yeah.
And they were chatting it up with each other. And Feingold was there, like nobody was talking to
Aww.
Him. He just had like a giant stack of books, like about a 4-foot stack of books under his arm, and he'd carry that.
Nerd!
I know! I thought they were going to take his lunch money from him. Then Robert Byrd came in, and everything had to stop because it took him like 40 minutes to get to his seat.
Oh, because he's shaking hands with everybody.
Well, no, he was like 96 years
old.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Telling about the good old days with the Klan, I
think. Yeah. Yeah. I met Paul Wellstone, the senator from Minnesota. And I was at an event that he was speaking at. And it was so funny because I was there with Companion and some friends. And the minute he got done talking, I jumped up. And a Companion told one of the other people at the table, he's going in for the handshake. And indeed, I wormed my way through that crowd. Here comes the hand. I shook hands with President Clinton and Vice President Gore.
Right.
One right after the other.
I remember that. You had a little, rating of them.
I did. I did. It was.
You said Clinton was much warmer and more claspy. And
yeah, his hand kind of enveloped my hand and sort of sucked the love out of me.
Gore was more mechanical.
He shook my hand with two fingers.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and he looked over my head. That guy's never going to be president.
That's funny. So,
two fingers. What are you, the Duke of something or other? He doesn't need to be in the House of Lords, buddy.
Well, that's funny. My favorite musician is Graham Parker.
Okay.
He's from England.
I'll write that down.
And you know that. I've said it a million times
on the air.
But he's coming to Milwaukee in April.
Oh.
I'm going to go see him at the Shank Hall. That'll be fun. But anyway, so I saw him two or three years ago at Shank Hall, and he got up and he likes chatting a little bit with the crowd and stuff. And he was saying I'll be glad to talk to you afterwards, but don't try to shake my hand. You Americans are always like, here, I want to shake your hand. Here, shake my hand. It's like, no, I don't want to shake your dirty hands. I appreciated the honesty there because I was going to go up to him and try to shake his hand.
That's like, well, I don't think I'm not as much of a handshaker since COVID.
Well, yeah, that too.
Yeah, I think we all got a little hand shy at that point.
Yeah, I just did the queen wave.
Yeah. I do the float wave.
The thumb on the
snoot,
nose.
Yeah, right. Cock a snoot, as they say. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, an election recount is underway in a Russian district. There might have been some voter fraud.
What, somebody voted for somebody other than Putin?
Putin failed to win the vote in the district.
Oh, well, obviously, that was a mistake.
So they're going to have
Trump and Putin, two minds think alike.
They're going to have to.
Obviously, it's fraud.
They're auditing that. They're checking out the polling station. And, they counted 763 votes for the Communist Party candidate. And then only 73 for Putin. So something was mixed up there.
I remember that ballot you sent me with the
Hitler
thing.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Hey, there's only one circle here. See, that was their problem. They had another little circle on the ballot. People get confused when you have too many options, you know. Paradox of choice. Hey, another story from the United Kingdom here. On Thursday, Vaughan Gething became the first black person to lead a national government in Europe. Now, it was in Wales, which, of course, is one of the constituent nations of the United Kingdom, but still, it's a signal achievement. The Welsh devolved parliament made Mr. Gething, who was born originally in Zambia, the first minister, as they call it there, just this week. And it's 94% of the population of Wales is white. There's 3 million people living there,
sure.
So it's really quite an accomplishment. It's a matter of pride, he said, I believe, for a modern Wales, but also a daunting responsibility for me and one that I do not take lightly.
Wow. Well, he ran on the platform that they were going to start using vowels.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And no town name more than 20 letters. You know? It's the signage.
That's their major expense, the signage.
But here's the interesting thing about it. So this means now that of the four constituent nations of the United Kingdom, not one of them is led by a white man at this point. So the Prime Minister of the whole United Kingdom, of course, is mostly governs over England, but of course the other parts too, is Rishi Sunak, as I was saying, and he's of Indian descent. And the First Minister, the new First Minister of Scotland is Humza Yousaf, and he is Pakistani by descent. And then Michelle O'Neill, she just became the first minister of Northern Ireland, so not a white man. And now, of course, we have Vaughan Gething. So Gething spent a lot of his life in politics, and he became active in the Welsh Labour Party back in 1992 when he was 17 adorable years old.
Cool. So Winnebago County, the county board, had a meeting this week, and they were discussing about accepting an $80,000 grant that would let them buy vending machines stocked with Narcan.
So I don't know what that is.
It's a thing you use to counter fentanyl.
Oh, right.
Overdoses.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So, thank you. Yeah, and it would have some other stuff in there, fentanyl test strips, drug deactivation bags. I don't know what that is, but anyway, so they were looking at that, and then but the county board, one of the county board supervisor, Paul Eisen, said instead of that, that people should be using tough love rather than Narcan.
Okay,
so that's just be tough with people, and then. Then they're
because that always works.
Yeah. So instead of like these machines that will dispense a life-saving drug.
Yeah.
But
that's really
tough
love.
Be tough with them.
Tough as you can get.
Yeah. This out of Tennessee is just a headline. Lawmakers propose legislation to ban first cousin marriages in Tennessee. Well, who are they going to marry then? I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, were we just, didn't we do a story? Didn't you do a story
they've been a few weeks ago a lot,
where
yeah.
this has come up and it was voted down or something?
Yeah,
right. You know? It was like,
Well, then there's all these, every once in a while, like stories about child marriages, and those get voted down where it's like you have to be, you know, somebody will propose that you should be 18 to get married. And they're like, no, we don't want that. And
well, on a related note, that's kind of a lead into this story. Donald Trump has finally sort of tipped his hand here on what he thinks about the abortion issue, because he said that he would support, if he were to be elected or whatever we call it in this country, president, that he would be
he gets the most likes.
Yeah, get the most likes. Well, you know, he can get the least likes and still become president. Apparently, you just have to bunch the likes in the right way. He said he would support a national ban on abortions at 15 weeks.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's the guy that's responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade. Just want to remind everybody. I mean, you may say it's the Supreme Court, but he put those guys
three of them on there.
And, I mean, I saw an article this week, and I was like, I know this, but it just reminded me of how galling it is. Five of those justices were appointed by somebody who did not win the most votes in the presidential election that they were in.
Yeah.
So, basically the 2000 election and the 2016 election, the loser in the popular votes got to pack the Supreme Court with members. It's an amazing system we have. But he takes credit for striking down Roe v. Wade, and he's probably trying to gin up a lot of his more traditionalist, supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Trump says, we're going to come up with a time, and maybe we could bring the country together on that issue.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, right. Which country are you talking about? The number of weeks now, people are agreeing on 15. I love his fractured syntax. And I'm thinking in terms of that, and it'll come out to something that's very reasonable. But people are really, even hardliners are agreeing, seems to be 15 weeks seems to be the number. And I read that because I appreciate, this is Michelle Price from Associated Press. Thank you, Michelle Price, for not cleaning up his absolutely insane chatter. He can't even say a complete English sentence at this point. But we all know who's got brain problems, right?
Yeah.
All right. Any rate. Meanwhile, down in Alabama, the Republicans there have voted to limit DEI efforts, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yeah. They pushed through a big measure on Tuesday that would not only ban state funding for DEI programs at public universities, local boards of education, and agencies, but would also, and here's the tipping point here, it would also limit the teaching of, quote, divisive concepts surrounding race, gender, and identity. And, of course, just like the law down in Florida that, the don't say gay, that, the Republicans are like, well, we never meant that. Yeah, well, you didn't know it. We didn't know what you meant. That's why it was a problem. The same thing here. The Democrats and civil rights advocates, student groups, and many others are worried that because it's so vague that it's going to be used in ways that, of course, effectively suppress people's ability to discuss issues of this kind in any way. So it's been a very fraught debate, as you can imagine. So,
it's just strange, not strange, but it's disturbing that so many of what are considered the big issues now are being driven by the right wing. I mean, things like immigration, which, you could argue that it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I understand that there are problems with it, but it also helps the economy.
Yeah.
They've made that like it's an emergency, a disaster. And that's, you always make things emergencies because then people will give up their rights.
Yeah.
And, but stuff like that, the diversity, I mean, just, attacking trans people. These are not issues that our federal government really should be that concerned with. I mean, the immigration, obviously, they have a role in, but I mean, they have bigger fish to fry, don't they?
Yeah.
Than, whether somebody's, what's on a syllabus in, Iowa State somewhere. I mean, those get amplified then, and then that's what people are talking about. Those, what are the issues of this campaign? Well, it's immigration and diversity and, trans people getting on sports teams.
Those are the biggies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what it is, as I perceive it, is that it's what's occluded here is the fact that we are having a religious controversy.
Yeah.
there is a minority of people in our population that have very strong traditional religious views, and they want to make sure that the rest of us are following them.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the modern Republican Party has decided that that's where the votes are.
It's
and so
Christian nationalist
Christian
party.
Nationalism, yeah. And so that's where we're going to go with this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same exact thing that Orban is doing. This is the same exact thing that Putin is doing. They ally themselves with traditional religiosity
right.
in order to and be the champions for those folks
mm-hmm.
and screw everybody else.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, then that has the advantage of putting your opponent on the defensive, saying, oh, we're the Christian people.
Right.
You must be the anti-Christian people.
Well it also, I mean, I think, unfortunately, means that everything is so, there's an antithesis that's always being created. So, like, I mean, some people on the left wonder about some of the DEI materials and how they're, but you can't have that conversation because it immediately is fodder for these people who want to do away with even talking about this
right.
stuff at all
right.
or having any kind of progressive program with respect to it. So on one side you have like, well, let's talk about that, but you're encouraged not to because basically, you know, it's going to be fodder for somebody else who's going to move the goalposts a few,
right.
you know, inches because they just want any kind of excuse
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people like words like woke and PC used to be the big thing back in the day.
Sure.
Those were terms within the leftist community. I mean, I remember PC when it became a right wing bashing thing.
Yeah.
Because I was, well, you and I were both in like groups that use PC as a kind of
a
gentle
positive thing.
Yeah, well, almost kind of a gentle mockery of people that went too crazy, you know,
yeah.
like the guy that thought we were all CIA agents, you know, working with the Madison insurgent. You know, you don't agree with me? He must be a CIA agent. Okay, that guy's a little too PC. You know what I mean? It's like that was kind of like gentle mockery. You know, it wasn't
yeah.
necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, but even before that,
it was a
neutral, almost
yeah,
a positive
yeah,
term.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, before it got to that point where it was gentle
yeah.
mockery, and
yeah.
then like Rush Limbaugh and people
yeah,
like
right.
that started using it as a
but
weapon.
But all it does is create the polarity that everyone complains about because you daren't even have an open conversation
yeah. oh, that's woke.
Within
yeah.
your own group yeah. about anything because some right winger is waiting there to weaponize it and
yeah.
bash you over
yeah.
the head
See,
with
they
it.
They agree with me.
Yeah, they agree with me. All those people over there, yeah.
No, I don't. you were talking earlier, you quoted Trump talking about how, you know, maybe we can all kind of get together on this abortion issue.
Yeah, I should wash my mouth
and
out.
Just,
I quoted
just,
Trump.
Just all the greed.
Yeah.
He said that a while ago, he'd said that he thought that they could have negotiated the Civil War without the issue of slavery, without going to war.
So what, half of the slaves get freed?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a real negotiated
then
issue.
And he said if they'd done that, nobody ever would have heard of Abraham Lincoln. Okay.
What a buffoon. Oh, there's a new book, by the way. That made me think. There's a new book that I saw reviewed in the, what's it, the New Yorker? I think I have it right here that I was really fascinated by. I just want to share. I don't normally do book recommendations, but this was just really fascinating. It was reviewed by Adam Gopnik in the most recent New Yorker. Of course, I have the New Yorker, you guys. You know, I'm such a stereotype. But it was, let's see, what is it called here? The title of the book is Takeover, Hitler's Final Rise to Power. And it focuses, this is by a guy by the name of Timothy Ryback. Takeover, Timothy Ryback. And basically it focuses on just on 1932 and the way in which all the conservatives thought Hitler was a maniac and an idiot and lazy and, you know, everything. But we'll use him.
Yeah.
And the parties on the other side that could have stood against him, no, we're not going to get together. We're going to vote for somebody else. You know, we can't stand Hillary. We can't stand Biden, you know, whatever
Hillary.
It is. So they're all like fighting. And meanwhile, the Nazis never get more than about a third of the vote in the electorate.
Right.
And they're running the country a year later, you know. And it's like, so he goes through this, Ryback goes through and he looks at every step of the way of how a person, a group that has just a minority supporting an extreme crazy guy manages through everybody's, you know, just sleepwalking to become the dictator. And it's like, and of course there's no analogies at all to anything that's going on right now. Just, I want to put that out there right away.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened with Prohibition. I mean, there was a very vocal, it was sort of similar to the abortion issue. Yeah. I mean, it was a very vocal minority that for like one moment in time, the stars were all aligned and they were able to get that that passed. Yeah. And then as soon as it was passed, everybody was like, what the hell's going on?
Do you know there's a wrinkle in there too? Because originally what they said, and this actually made some sense, the original proposal was it should be only hard liquors are banned because you literally people can die from alcohol poisoning if they drink liquor too fast. We've weaponized liquor as well as anything else. You know, you drink too much wine or beer, you just throw up. You know, but you know, how many vodkas can you get down you before your brain starts going dead?
Asking me?
Well, I think after the great experiment that's coming up, we'll be able to find that out, right? But that was originally. But when once it got to Congress, and once they start working it up, everybody wants to be a little bit more dedicated to the cause than the last person, and you end up with your 15 weeks abortion ban. You know.
I mean, alcohol was a problem. I mean, it still is, obviously. Yeah. Because it was so unregulated, there was a lot of...
It was a serious women's issue, too, when women didn't have independent power.
Men would go to the bars and drink up their paychecks.
And you're yoked to this idiot. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a big women's issue
at the time. So, I mean, so there was some validity to a lot of that. But the way it morphed into this thing, but then it led to, you know... organized crime, of course.
Led to the 1920s.
Love it. Great music. All right, we have to take a break. We're going to play some announcements, and then we're going to come back with...
Oh, I don't know. Something positive.
Yeah. Can we live on Mars? People are starting to ask that question.
Snickers or Milky Way? I did once eat... How many did I eat? When I was a freshman in college, I think I ate 20 Snickers bars.
And you lived?
The two things I wanted to do was grow a beard. I'm out of the house now. I can grow a beard.
Yeah.
Which I did. And I can eat as many Snickers bars as I want. And I realized that there's something
What time frame are they talking about?
In a day.
A day?
Yeah.
20 in a day?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. You must have been sick as a dog.
Oh, I was sick as a dog. But what it shows you is freedom comes with a price.
I'm joining the Libertarian Party. Yeah, right.
Maybe self-control would help.
All right, we're going to be back. We have to play some announcements.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies, at wineandhop.com.
You wake up to the 8 o'clock buzz to get the week started.
Now, we need the help of a good volunteer to run our on-air operations each Monday.
Sure, that means waking up a little earlier.
To get to the station around 7:30.
But that's why WORT has coffee.
So that you can start your week off right.
WORT is recruiting a volunteer to run the soundboard each week on Monday mornings from 7:30 to 9 a.m.
You'd run all on-air operations for our morning program, The 8 O'Clock Buzz with Brian Standing.
No experience is necessary, but a familiarity with computers and a strong sense of punctuality and reliability are preferred.
For details, call 608-256-2001 and ask to speak with Shali Pittman.
Or head online to WORTFM.org/volunteer to fill out our volunteer application.
The 2024 Wisconsin Film Festival is coming to Madison Thursday, April 4th through Thursday, April 11th. This year's festival boasts over 140 films of all shapes and sizes, including the best cinema has to offer from all over the world and right here in Wisconsin. We've got experimental, animated, and student films, as well as documentaries, restored classics, films for kids, and more. For the first time in years, we'll be returning to both the Bartell Theater and the Barrymore Theater. Plus, we've expanded on the UW campus into Music Hall, and we are heading east to Flick's Brewhouse at the Easttown Mall. The Wisconsin Film Festival curates, promotes, and exhibits programs that showcase the art of cinema. A complete festival guide is available in the March issue of Isthmus and online, and tickets are available at wifilmfest.org. The 2024 Wisconsin Film Festival is coming to a screen near you, Thursday, April 4th through Thursday, April 11th. Helping keep local arts alive for almost 50 years, this is WORT Madison.
And we'll be down at the film festival at Floyd tonight. You're unavailable that day, unfortunately, but we're going to do our annual live film festival broadcast, but we'll be down at the Bartell Theater this year, which will be really fun. We did a little walkthrough there on Tuesday, Ruby and Elmer and I, and it's a nice place. I haven't been there in a while, so I'm really looking forward to it. It should be fun. Come on down and say hi.
Yeah. And if you don't feel like coming down, I do want to. I don't want to do any counter programming. I don't want to. I don't want to step on that.
Yeah, go
but
ahead.
We are having a big event, which I'm centrally involved in, over at Edgewood College here in Madison, Wisconsin. There's an organization called the Wisconsin Institute for Peace and Conflict Studies, and there's going to be a conference there on Friday, April 5th at Edgewood College. And the focus of the conference is conflict and peace building in a world of environmental challenge. And there's going to be it's open. There's no conference fee. There's a free lunch that will be provided for anybody that wants to participate. Now, there are people that are going to be doing panel discussions, and there are going to be people that are going to be doing presentations and so on. Academics, activists, students. But if you were to just show up, now that schedule has been taken care of, but if you'd like to just show up and learn something, during the luncheon we're going to be doing a call to action, feedback, questions. It's a community event, so please, if you do want to come over, don't hesitate to do so. There's plenty of parking, and it's a completely free event, thanks to generous contributions from donors. So,
but I think you should come to the Bartell Theater and see our live remote.
Well, I'm going
to
play a banjo. Da-da-dum, dum, dum, da-da-dum, dum, 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 dum.
I'm spinning plates and chainsaws. So researchers have studied, people are all about, let's go to Mars. Let's go to Mars. Let's all move to Mars. Let's ruin this planet, move to Mars.
Yeah. I notice it's the oligarchs that seem to have that in mind. You think they might want to start their own civilization? I don't know.
Kinda.
Yeah.
But some researchers looked at whether that was really, practical.
Yeah.
And they looked at a couple of main questions. One focused on the impact of particle radiation, which would be a big thing.
That's not something to sneeze at.
And the second about whether the timing of a mission to Mars could protect astronauts and the spacecraft from radiation.
Sure.
Following the study, they found that it would not be possible for humans to stay on Mars long term because of this aforementioned radiation. They found that human exposure to radiation threats, including particle radiation from the sun, distant stars and galaxies even, would exceed safe levels after 4 years on the planet.
Yep. Yep.
So that's about as long as you could stay there and not turn into the Hulk or whatever it's going to do to you. But they determined that the spacecraft would be enough protection. So that's really not.
If we're going to build the robots, let them do this.
I'm in favor of the robots.
Yeah.
Robots.
Here's the thing: no matter how bad things get on the Earth, and in the next 20 to 30 years, Mel, they're probably going to get pretty bad. But no matter how bad things are, you're not living on Mars.
It's a million times better than
living on Mars. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, we don't understand the extent to which we are just, as it were, a kind of a coming together of the resources in an environment. We just don't take it seriously that we are part of the natural world. And so the idea that we could somehow live in an environment in which, I mean, millions of our ancestors died so that we could live in this. I mean, really, all evolution is culling. That's all it is.
Practice.
Yeah, and it took a very long time to get that equilibrium, and we still don't have it, right? I mean, that's what COVID was about. There's some new organism that can wipe you out because everything's still continuing to change.
Yeah. But at least we have air and water here.
Yeah, we got air and water. There's poison in the very earth, in the ground in Mars. I mean, it's like percolates are in the. I mean, you're gonna be basically fighting with every. I mean, you could live in one of the lava tubes or whatever, but I mean, you can't live in there forever, for goodness sakes.
Right.
I mean, I used to have problems with this. There was this TV series at the beginning of the 2000s called Battlestar Galactica. It was a revival of an old corny show from the 70s. And myself and companion and a bunch of friends would watch it weekly. We really enjoyed it. But it was completely implausible. It's like you cannot build a civilization with 3,000 people. I mean, it's impossible to keep that going. Every time I'd watch that show, it's like, you realize that's the last, you know, a bottle of brandy, right? Like the captain would smoke a cigar. You realize that's the last cigar in the universe, right? I mean, it's like nobody's making any more of that stuff. Yeah. You know? I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how you would have an economy and a civilization, or let alone all the issues about environmental degradation.
Yeah, The book I'd mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I'm reading about, the city on Mars and they talk a lot about procreation, and it's like, is that going to even work?
Yeah,
and light gravity and
it's iffy enough on Earth.
Yeah,
I know. No, it's just
so
crazy.
So it might be you send people there and you got one generation and they die off.
This is just like pie in the sky. I mean, it's the same kind of thing as like pie in the sky when you die kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's just like okay, we don't have to take care of what's here right now because we can always just jump in, Elon Musk's rocket and fly off. He's like, no, we can't do that. That's completely, completely fantastical.
Yeah.
So. It's sad for us because we're total science nerds, but it's just like, that's just the way it is. Science means you find out what things are really like.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference between science and science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And everybody be constipated all the time. Because of the gravity.
Yeah, so. Good point. And then they'd be really cranky.
They would be. Doctors in Boston have transplanted a pig kidney into a 62-year-old human.
Yeah.
The latest experiment in the quest to use animal organs in humans.
It's alive.
It was a genetically modified pig kidney.
Yeah. That's the best kind.
And it came with a side order of onions. How would you like to be walking around with a pig kidney? That'd be kind of a fun conversation starter.
That reminds me of my old friend Mark Claypool, who had was a polydactyl, and he had too many toes.
Oh, okay.
And he would want to see my toes. He'd always say, "No, Mark, we don't want to see your toes." So if I had a pig kidney, I don't think I would stand out.
Oh,
yeah. I'd want everybody to know. You have a pig kidney? A modified pig kidney.
It's a genetically modified pig kidney.
Don't sell me short here.
Wonder what RFK Jr. thinks of that.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. He's genetically modified, I think. Something's wrong with that man. I'm not sure quite what it is.
Yeah.
Hey, did what's-his-face ever decide to become vice president? You know, that...
Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, that guy, yeah.
It's between him and Jesse the Body Ventura. Yeah.
I think they'd have some kind of fight-off,
I don't know.
Trial by ordeal.
The last I heard that he was floating it to, some big donor who... they had that stupid Super Bowl commercial
it
was like a recreated the JFK commercial from 1960.
Yeah.
Which, nobody really remembers except for, political nerds.
Yeah. Right.
And she was apparently the brains behind that and the money behind that. Right. And so she might get on the ticket because of that contribution.
Oh, okay. So. That was roundly criticized.
I know.
So I would say put her on the ticket.
Authorities in Langelade County in Wisconsin have arrested the treasurer of a northern Wisconsin town after it was discovered that he was mishandling money and stole more than $300,000. The sheriff's office says that this guy was the controller for the town of Ackley. He was a board member claiming that he was the treasurer. Gary Kuiper was mishandling town money. He's 69 years old.
Dangerous age.
And they say he's been doing this for years and years, and somehow he managed to siphon off $300,000.
I blame those damn kids.
Oh, man. So, can't trust anybody anymore.
A little closer to home. Recent population estimates for Dane County say that we continue to outpace projections. Latest population estimates reflect a 2.5% increase between April 2020 and July 2023. Basically, Dane County's population has risen from an estimated 561,500 residents to 575,350, according to the U.S. Census, which released its estimate this week. So shows a pretty robust area. According to a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison by the name of Kurt Paulson, it shows the economic strength of the region. It also means we really have to go and update our long-term forecasts because they were not projecting that many people would actually move here.
Pretty soon we're going to have more people than Wyoming, and we probably already do.
Yeah,
but then probably more than Vermont as well, and we'll be pushing Alaska pretty soon. So our county is going to have more than two or three states before too long.
I think we should make a corridor to create a separate state, right? Isn't this what everyone's doing?
Yeah,
right,
let's
now?
Do that.
Yeah, let's do a separate state for Dane County.
We can do a new flag then.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Now you're talking my language.
Oh, I thought that was your motivation.
Yeah. Well, now that you reminded me of it, yeah, that is my motivation. It was a hidden motivation. Hey, here's a negative thing that happened after the pandemic.
Oh.
It's kind of sad, but, you know, it was kind of inevitable. Joanne, the arts and crafts retailer.
Yeah.
They've been operating for about 80 years.
Oh, no. Are they going under?
They are going under because I think the thing was they were in such a boom during the pandemic that they basically thought they thought the good times were never going to end, and they did some unwise investment and some unwise extensions.
Red 42.
So yeah, exactly. Put it all on Santa's Little Helper, and so there's that too. Yeah, Joanne was known for that.
Joanne's nice.
No, Joanne's nice. I'm just teasing.
It's too bad.
That's
an institution.
Then its most recently quarterly earnings report in December show that they had a big dip in sales, and so they're basically filing for bankruptcy. So they sell yarn, fabrics, and home goods, and so they had a huge sales boom during the pandemic.
Yeah,
because people were at home and they didn't know what to do with themselves,
right.
And they thought, I'd better put something in my hands that's constructive, or else it might be my spouse's neck.
Killing my partner.
Yeah, exactly.
Sick of his goddamn sourdough.
Exactly.
The Tennessee Senate has passed a bill targeting chemtrails. It was passed in the Senate on Monday. The bill
Do those involve Jewish space lasers?
No, it's pretty close.
Okay, all right.
The bill claims it has documented the federal government or other entities acting on the federal government's behalf or at the federal government's request may conduct geoengineering experiments by intentionally dispersing chemicals into the atmosphere, and those activities may occur within the state of Tennessee. The legislation would ban the practice in Tennessee. Intentional injection, release, or dispersion by any means of chemicals, chemical compounds, substances, or apparatus within the borders of the state into the atmosphere with the express purpose of affecting temperature, weather, or the intensity of sunlight is prohibited.
Wow. So here's a story I probably could not say on the air in Alabama. The headline is half male, half female.
Oh no!
And completely stunning. This comes from an evolutionary biologist by the name of Hamish Spencer, who is a professor at the University of Otago in New Zealand, and he recently was bird watching in Colombia, and he got something that he did not expect, which is he went on an outing for bird watching in January of 2023. And he was attracted to a kind of bird called a green honey creeper, which is a bird that's native to South America. It's a little songbird, and it actually goes all the way up to southern Mexico, down to Brazil. But here's an interesting thing about this bird. The left side of its body was covered in shimmering spring green feathers, which is female coloring, and the right side was iridescent blue, which is a male color.
Oh,
it's
really
a
cool.
bird that's a bilateral gyandromorph. And that means it's female on one side and male on the other.
Oh, my goodness.
Gyandromorphism has been well documented in a variety of birds, insects, crustaceans, and other organisms. Now, according to Dr. Spencer, this is the only known case of bilateral gyandromorphism in a green honeycreeper. And it's the first one documented in the wild. But apparently it happens during reproduction. It's like things don't... It's biology,
oh,
you know?
How cool.
It's basically female birds have different sex chromosomes and male has different sex chromosomes. And sometimes when the egg is being produced, they fuse in different ways. So if the fused cells are fertilized by two different sperms, each one of which carries what are called for birds Z chromosomes, the result might be a bird with a WZ. And that is some of the female chromosomes and some of the male chromosomes. So you've got a bird that's half and half.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. They had performers like that along, like in the 30s.
Evangelicals, you're up.
Yeah. Like in the 30s and 40s, they would have like the vaudeville people they would turn one way and
Victor
they were,
Victoria,
they'd be a man and they'd turn the other way, other profile, they'd be.
But I'm just, you see stuff like that and you're like, okay, so where are these weird rigid categories coming from that people think are absolute and ordained by God at the beginning of the time? Have you looked out the window recently?
Why did God do that if it's such an abomination?
Yeah, I guess Satan did it when we weren't looking.
Oh, was it Satan?
Yeah. That must have been it.
I was thinking the other day about how limited the thinking is about what a God is. You know, it's all based on
your God is too small.
It's based on your human authoritarian model. It's like here's the boss sitting up in the big chair, and then you got the kind of the bureaucracy around him there, and it's always a guy, of course.
Yeah.
And but you got like the lieutenants, you got the angels, and you got
the sub-angels.
And ghosts and ghouls or whatever. I don't know
whatever's dancing around God's throne today.
Cupids.
Pootie, those are called.
you got the Michael with the flaming sword. And but then you got like the guardian angels who just like keep you from stepping out in front of a bus or something. I think that's those are like the lower level ones. That's kind of training wheel angels.
Right. Hi, my name is.
Right. And then you got the enemy who's like kind of a mirror image of, I mean, it's so
my favorite
basic
is, maybe you've seen this on the internet. It came out years ago, but I still think it's a wonderful joke. And it basically show the earth. And they show the solar system, and then they show the local group, and then they show, the Virgo supercluster, and then they keep going out. And finally, you get to like this, seven or eight, nine or 10 removes from, and you see it's this big block, and Jesus is like looming over it, and he's got his finger, and he's saying, "Now don't masturbate." Because that's how he spends his time. He's running the whole shebang, an infinite but bounded sphere in four dimensions. And he's, and for every place on the in that infinite but bounded space, God can create activity. And for everything that is true, God knows it's true. For everything that's false, God knows it's false. For every act that God performs, it is always right. Blah, 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 blah. But he's worried about that. Like, you really need to think about it a minute.
No, that doesn't go in there.
What you're talking about.
That does not go in there.
Yeah. Yep. Got to put tab A and slot B. I'm sorry.
I created the universe, and now this is what I do. So. Yep. I don't know, maybe he's retired. Maybe it's kind of his version of stay off my lawn.
Well, that was Nietzsche's idea.
Yeah,
well. He's not dead. He's just unemployed.
Speaking of unemployed, Kyle Rittenhouse was on a speaking engagement. Presented,
that was edifying.
It was at a University of Memphis on Wednesday, sponsored by Turning Point USA.
Oh, of course.
And he abruptly departed the stage because the college students were mean to him.
Aww.
They started asking at Turning Point USA is run by some guy named Charlie Kirk, who's one right wing. Guy.
He's a dude.
And one of the people when asked the Rittenhouse about why he was associating with this, well, then this guy was black. He was asking the question why he was associating with this racist.
Yeah.
And Rittenhouse goes, "Yeah, I don't know. He's not a racist." And then the questioner listed several things that indicated that Kirk probably is a racist. Yeah. Or racist things he said.
Yeah.
And
that was a hurtful thing. I don't know if you should bring that up.
That was hurtful because then the Rittenhouse said, "I don't know anything about that." And the questioner followed up saying, "Well, does that seem racist? Is that that's a yes or no question, Kyle?" And then he said, "I'm not going to comment on that." And then he ran off the stage, bravely ran away.
Well, it does remind me of a job I once had where things were getting a little rough and I said, "Excuse me, can I use the bathroom?" and never came back. But I mean, I don't think everybody should do that.
I think this indicates his usefulness to the to those people is
pretty low,
pretty much coming to an end.
Yeah,
so,
because
he's been crying that he's like unemployed, doesn't have any money, and you know, he was going to go to college and become a nurse or something. That was his story when he was in court. But
poor guy.
Yeah,
I feel so bad for him. Not. Hey, things in Iceland are kind of groovy right now. I've been to Iceland a few times, and it's a wonderful country. And tourism is a major, of course, source of income for them there. But it's, the tourism is kind of not doing so well. And the reason why is because there's a lot of lava laying around right now. You know, just last week there was a stream of lava that burst from a crater a few miles from one of the major resorts that exists there in Iceland, the Blue Lagoon Resort. Now, as you can imagine, a companion and I went there, and you can get into it's geothermal water and spa treatments and things like that. Of course, as you can imagine, companion just jumped right in, and I was like, "No, I don't want people to see my naked body." You know, I'm not a good spa person. That's not me.
Right.
But it's a lovely place. But this most recent lava eruption is not too far from Blue Lagoon, and many people have been evicted from their homes. Basically, their homes have been destroyed, and villagers in the tiny village of Grindavik, which is right nearby, basically it's kind of falling into a crevasse right now. So there's a lot of anxiety associated with this. I mean, we were there when these earthquakes for this particular round first started. We had like three or something like that while we were there. I woke up in the middle of the night by
really?
One of them. Yeah.
Wow.
It turned out we got in the airplane to leave, and we both thought we both had the exact same picture in our minds, cinematic image in our minds, that as the plane was taking off, the runway was going to crack behind us. And as we were going into the air, we said, "You know, I had this image that as we were in," it's like, "I did too." I was like, "We've seen too many
punch it higher,
seen too many action movies, obviously."
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, they're in a bit of a pickle right now in Iceland. Poor Iceland.
Oh.
U.S. marriages have rebounded to pre-pandemic levels with nearly 2.1 million in 2022, and that's a 4% increase from the year before, as according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So if you see another one of those wretched columns from some right-wing jerk telling you, "Why don't people get married anymore?" You know, they're doing it, all right?
Yeah.
They don't need you to tell them about it.
It's kind of like the crime epidemic, where crime is at low as it's been in 20 years or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't remember the numbers, but I mean,
it's not zero, Mel.
I remember one time something happened a long time ago. In
a black man laughed at me.
In Mexico, and they were immigrants.
Yeah, right. That is modern conservatism, that somewhere, somehow, there's a black man who's laughing at you.
And getting something that he shouldn't deserve.
Exactly.
I saw a story where they were trying to cut free lunches for kids, for school kids.
Yeah.
And then they showed some of the arguments, and some of the legislators were saying, "Well, there's a lot of people getting these that really don't deserve them. They don't need them." And it's like, yeah, it's chipped beef and some cream corn.
I remember those. That's what I had growing up.
Let them have it. you mentioned the marriage rate going up. The life expectancy went up in the United States this last year.
Wonder why.
Too, so,
but that fake pandemic is over.
Yeah, is that it?
Yeah.
I love the little color-coded map I sent you yesterday.
Oh, that was lovely.
It was life expectancy by county.
Yeah.
It was there was this big red boil right in the southeast part of the country.
Sometimes you get those in the southern regions.
Yeah. down in the Confederacy.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got to get out of here. Time to declare. the weekend. Enjoy your weekend. And
we command you.
Yeah. Get out there and shovel snow.
Frolic.
Shovel snow or something. So there were like a million birds on the road today. I don't know if they were thirsty or what, but there was like robins and crows. They were
I'll keep
all
an
over,
eye for
so
that.
I'll have to look up why they were so aggressive. But they were just like in the country roads where I came in there. They were like, I don't know.
They're probably confused by the weather.
I was wondering if it was something like that. So anyway, we've got to get out of here. The Kieska's next. After that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jaguar. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye. Do you like it?
Goodbye, friends. I'll miss you. Good riddance to them. Now Zoidberg is the popular one.
Yes. Let's all talk to Zoidberg.
You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, March 22nd. This is Bird Note. To our ear, the haunting song of the hermit thrush is musical, even ethereal. To another hermit thrush, the song signals a male is laying claim to a territory and seeking a mate. Spend time around hermit thrushes in a mountain forest in summer, and you're also likely to hear them make other sounds, such as, or, hermit thrushes, like other songbirds, broadcast a variety of calls. Call notes can signal many things: alarm at a predator, or aggression toward a rival. Or they may simply maintain contact between members of a pair or flock. Black-capped chickadees sing a plaintive whistled song and make a call that gives the bird its name. The chickadee call serves different purposes in different contexts and is but one of a dozen in the bird's repertoire. American goldfinch males sing a bright, bubbly song and nearly always call in flight with a sweet four-syllable. Like to tell us what birds are singing and calling around your home? Find us at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein. Tomorrow, the BIPOC Birding Club will host its third annual Woodcock Walk. You're invited to join and search for these cool little birds as they peent and do their quirky and elaborate courtship fights called sky dances. BIPOC Birding Club events are open to all BIPOC birders at any level and allies.